Here we go, Antlers and Hicks podcast, episode number 43 with Jake Orman from Sterlington, Louisiana. Jake is a professional bass angler, and he's got him a state record. Now, it's not a bass like you would expect, but it's a needle-nose gar, pretty good-sized needle-nose gar, actually. So you're going to want to listen to this. Now, it's episode 43. You're like, gee, I only see two podcast episodes on YouTube. Yeah, I know, man. Look, we got the rest of them over there on iTunes, Spotify. This is the second one that I've got video style, okay? And if you like what we're doing during fishing season, just wait till hunting season. This is going, I love to talk about deer hunting. I'm getting into the fishing game, but deer hunting is where the bread and butter of this podcast came from. So without further ado, I got a little Elijah Craig small batch right here in the glass. Going to sit back, nip on that, and let you guys enjoy Jake Orman, Sterlington, Louisiana. Here we go. Louisiana sportsmen, you know, they posted their story yesterday. I read it. They did an outstanding job with it, and now I want to hear it straight from you, brother. Go on and give it to us.
Five foot long, and, you know, as big as a cantaloupe, and he's a big one. I said, I don't know how. But he ran about 50 yards, turned around, and went back the other way, went all the way back to where I caught him at.
First off, thanks for taking time to come on. I mean, I know it's Sunday afternoon. You know, usually I got me a little bourbon today. Of course, it's the Lord's Day. I got me a little ice water. You know, I'm going to be a little reverent today. But thank you for coming on. But let me ask you, as a professional angler, is this a state record you would thought you would have gotten?
No, not at all. I mean, I caught a freshwater drum several years ago that actually would have been in the top five, but I never got it certified. But and now I don't even know if he's in, even up there now. It was like 29 pounds, but yeah, I mean, I fish all the time and I catch a lot of fish. I don't really pursue any certain record or anything. I just like to fish and catch big fish.
Yeah, I know that's right. Let's talk about something real quick. I want to ask you something I've always wondered, and now that I've gotten to see you a little bit during the year, I hate to have been able to talk to you very much, because it seems like when we do those weigh-ins with Arkla, it's just get it, and then turn around and everybody's gone. And
right.
I've been wanting to talk to you because there's been a burning question on my mind for the last, I guess, since you went professional. What's the life of a professional angler like? I mean, I've always wanted to know.
It's busy. Stay pretty busy trying to, you know, just whether it's preparing for tournaments or guiding or, you know, whatever you're trying to figure out to prepare for the next tournament or the next trip or whatever you got to do there.
How far do you go? Stay pretty busy. Okay. How far do you travel?
You know, I used to fish the bass, what'd they call it? The Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit. Mm-hmm. And that traveled, I mean, I traveled all the way to Wisconsin and New York and, Florida. I mean, traveled all over the country when I was fishing that. And then the last 2 years, I've been staying a little closer and fishing the Toyota series and fishing Texas. And I did drive to Florida year before last, but mostly I'm staying now within 3 to 5 hours most of the drives I do now.
That's not too terribly bad, I guess, but still, I mean, I know you guide, right? Do you do anything besides the pro stuff and the guiding?
I also do some like electronics installations on, you know, some boats for people. I also do electronics classes. I teach them how to use their electronics, how to get the most out of their equipment.
Yeah, I bet that's probably. I bet you're staying so busy with that. I would think, because you got hacks like me that go out there. Man, I got no idea what I'm looking at. You know, I want to know from a professional or somebody that knows what they're looking at. You know, right, how to use the side imaging, how to use the forward facing stuff. You stay pretty busy with it.
Yeah, and that's what I Yeah, I do that. So I kind of just mix it up because you never know. You know, some days it's, or some weeks are busy with guide trips, and then you have a week that's, it's all electronics classes. It just, you know, work it out. However, just I take book, I'll book people for either one. So it's just, it's kind of stays busy randomly, different deals. Everybody's different.
Now you, you're from Sterlington, right? You're from right here in Sterlington, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
What year, tell us about coming up through Sterlington High School. Did you fish?
I actually went to Washita Christian. I went to OCS.
Oh, you went to Washita. I forgot you went to OCS. Yeah. Forgot you went to OCS. So they didn't have a fishing team at OCS, did they?
No, we didn't have a fishing team at OCS. Actually, I didn't, you know, in high school, a few buddies of mine, we would have little fruit jar tournaments on the weekends, you know, in the summertime and during school and stuff. But I really didn't start fishing until I got into college, and I started the fishing team at ULM. I was the president of the fishing team at ULM the first, 2009, 10, and 11 when I graduated, 2011.
That's a pretty big team, man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think they still do pretty solid in these tournaments, right?
Yeah, they still are a really good team. It's this area, the Northeast Louisiana area, has probably some of the best anglers in the country come out of it. And there's a lot of really good anglers in this area.
When you fish there, if I'm not mistaken, didn't you guys do really well in a national tournament one year?
Yeah, well, so Brett Pruitt and Paul Clark, I think, went to the national championship the year. That's when they won, was the year after I graduated.
I got you. Okay.
But, you know, when I was there, let's see, I had several top 10 finishes in college tournaments, whether they were, I know one was at Choke Canyon, one at Lake Dardanelle, Toledo Bend, and Sam Rayburn. So I know of four that I had top 10s for sure.
That's good, dude. That's real good. Out of all of them, which one was your favorite?
I like Sam Rayburn. That's probably one of my favorite lakes that I fish pretty regularly. Even still, the Toyotas go to Sam Rayburn every year, so I fish that every year.
Tell me about Sam Rayburn. What do you like so much about that one? Is it kind of, does it fish a little bit like what you're used to around here, or is it just the opposite, something that's different?
Yeah, it kind of fishes similar to around here. It's Lake Darbone is kind of a smaller Rayburn, I would say. It's got the bushes and stumps and trees and all of that. It's got grass in it. And what's good about Sam Rayburn is it's so big that you can kind of fish your strength, and somewhere on that lake you can find fish doing whatever your strength is of fishing.
Mm-hmm.
So, so that's what I like about it. I mean, if I want to fish bushes and grass, which what I like to do is fish flip bushes, fish trees, fish grass, there's a section of the lake that I can go to and find fish in that section of the lake.
I got you. So when you're not fishing these nice large tournaments and you're not installing and teaching people how to use their expensive, man, it kills me at looking at how much money people spend on these electronics. Cause I'm like, man, what you guys do on the side? Y'all sling a little dope or something? Cause I mean, this stuff ain't cheap. But, you know, when you're not doing that, tell me about some of the other stuff you're doing. Like with the guiding, like what you were doing the other day.
I do a lot of hunting.
Oh, yeah. I see that in the background. Okay, I see them deer heads back there.
I see what you were saying. But, yeah. But so the fishing lessons, that is actually something I started this year. I started doing that this year. I haven't seen really anywhere many people doing that. I thought it was a good opportunity to get involved with the kids in the area and kind of help them along, whether it was, you know, how to prepare for tournaments, how to break down lakes, different types of casts, different ways to work different types of lures. So I just kind of put together an assessment class. They fill out the assessment, and then I go from there and I figure out what they need to work on, and we basically run the lesson to what their needs are.
How did you come up with this idea, Cuz? Because I'll be honest with you, that sounds very intense, and it seems like something that it kind of goes along the lines of what, you know, they do with young athletes, I suppose. You know, they kind of look at what your breakdown
is. It's kind of like, it's like, I mean, you have baseball camps and pitching camp, hitting camps, and these things are baseball. I was just trying to kind of come up with something for fishing that would be similar to that for the high school angler or the, you know, whatever, that if they're wanting to get into fishing, tournament fishing, or just learning to fish their local pond or behind their house or whatever, they just want to get better at it. Just trying to find a way to help them out.
And how many young people are you working with right now?
I've had, I believe it's 8 kids so far.
Okay. And how long does one of these class? This is like, I had no idea you were doing this, dude. So like, and I've got thousands of questions running through my mind.
I got you.
How many days does it usually last?
So I was doing, most kids sign up, they're signing up for a 2 3-hour sessions, 2 day, you know, 2 consecutive days, 3-hour sessions. And we just work on, you know, tying knots, whatever. It all depends, you know. It's every kid's unique. It's a customized individual lesson plan for each kid.
And is this something that they could do, like they could come this year and learn a little bit, come next year and learn a little bit more, stuff like that?
Yeah, that's right. And so, and as they get, you know, more advanced and want to learn, and the more advanced they go into it, the more advanced that I can help them and give them tips on.
I like that, man. That's some good stuff right there. Not only are you giving back to the community, you know, you're sitting here educating young people, and dude, that is awesome, man. I've never heard of anything like this. Did you see this model somewhere else? You're like, let's then plug it in around here, or is it just something you just thought of one day?
Yeah, just kind of thought of it, I guess. I tried to look for something similar, but most of the things I see are like really big camps where it's like big groups of kids that are, there may be 10 or 20 kids, and you're standing down the bank. Not each individual kid gets the hands-on or the actual help that could actually, you know, individually they don't get the right help. It's kind of like, so I was just trying to figure out a way to make it more individualized.
Man, I like this, dude. I'm really, folks, if you got a child or got a young person that wants to get in, is there a minimum age range, Jake, that you're looking for?
Yeah, I prefer that the kids have at least some basic fishing experience. Like they need to, ideally, they kind of already need to know most of their casts, you know, use them different, a bait caster. Not that I can't work with them also on that, but it does help as far as they get more in depth if it's, they can already cast fairly well, and I'm just teaching them different things on how to work different types of lures and, you know, how to break down the water, why you throw this bait in this place and not that one, and those kinds of things.
Hey, will you take an old person like me? Because, I mean, dude, I got to have some work too, man.
So like my regular guide trip days, I have a lot of people that call me want to go on a guide trip, and they want it to be more of a learning deal more than just go cast here and catch one.
Yeah.
So I get a lot of that and even some, you know, that's something I would say for the adults and people that or I guess at a more advanced level, that they can get more out of that by just doing a guided trip with me. But we'll focus more on those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that's awesome, man. That fires me up, cuz I like that kind of stuff, to hear positive stuff like that. Do you got a name for it? You got a good catchy name for it? Like Jayco's school, something like, just something cool, man.
No, I really don't.
We'll get you some shirts made up, dude.
We gotta come up with some stuff, yeah.
Yeah, we'll work on something, Jake. We're gonna get you something, trust me. So
I had a couple little flyers that I had put out at some of the tackle stores and things. It's just a little flyer for it, but I don't have any really catchy name for it.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get you something, man. Well, you just give me a little bit. I'll shoot you a text in a couple of days, right, and we'll get something going. So let's shift gears real quick. Let's go for the main thing that we're here for. Dude, first off, is there a difference? Because I've always heard you, it's a what you call the state record long nose gar, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Is that what we always called a needle nose gar?
Yeah, needle nose. Some people call them a scissor bill, or
okay,
you know, just that long, real skinny snout. You see a lot of them come up and roll in the river, and then all the like Darbon Bayou, you see a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
but we don't see them like. Go ahead.
He's a different gar than the one that you see hanging around the lights under the docks and stuff. There's a spotted gar. And then there's the long nose gar. The spotted gar doesn't get as big. And then you got the long nose gar. He gets up to, you know, I'd say I think the world record's like 60 pounds. But, and then the alligator gar, he gets up to in the like couple hundred pounds.
Yeah. I think, Blake Shelby has had. Like the state record, I don't know, maybe it's bigger than the state record, that alligator gar he bowfished several years ago. That dude was like 6-7 foot tall, bigger than him. Mm-hmm. That was huge. So that's the alligator. He's got that, and it's named the alligator because to get that head like an alligator, right?
Right. He's got a more shorter rounded nose. He's a little bit, they get huge, 6-7 feet yeah, long, and maybe bigger than that.
That's the only gar I've really ever paid attention to, because I guess that's the ones we see people bowfishing the most, you know. We'll see them shoot some of those long-nosed gar, but, you know, they don't get near the size that those big alligator gars get up to. So, unpack that day, man. I want to know from stem to stern about this story, because I read a little bit about it. Louisiana Sportsman, you know, they posted their story yesterday. I read it. They did an outstanding job with it, and now I want to hear it straight from you, brother. Go on and give it to us.
I was given a fishing lesson, and we were working on crankbait, so we were just – I was helping the kid, you know, stop and go retrieves and how to reel, holding the rod, keeping his rod tip down, those kinds of things, just – And we were catching some bass. I think we had caught, I don't know, 8 or 9, 10 bass so far already. And we were doing pretty good, is at least getting bites. And we just pulled up on this point that I've caught bass there before, and there's usually a school of fish there. So I figured it'd be another place that he could actually get a couple bites. And I don't know, we made just a couple of casts, and this fish rolls out there 50, 60 feet to the right of the boat. And I mean, a gar, they like flashy baits and things. And so I had a flutter spoon laying on the deck. I just picked it up and pitched it over that direction that he rolled. And I saw how big, I didn't know the fish was that big. I just knew he was a big one. And it would have been, and I figured, the kid, he was 7, so I figured he'd think it's pretty cool if I was able to get this thing hooked and get him upside the boat, because I knew it was probably bigger than anything he'd ever seen up close. And anyways, I pitched the spoon to it, and he didn't bite the spoon the first cast. And I turned my live scope to him, and I, on my boat, I run 2 live scope units. I run 1 in forward view and 1 in perspective mode. And so when I turned the trolling motor that way, he was already on the bottom. It was only like 6 foot deep where he was at. And the fish was laying on the bottom and he was facing straight away from me. But when he rolled, he was, you know, sideways. And then whenever he went to the bottom, he turned and faced away from me. But I couldn't tell on the perspective mode which end was which of the gar. And so I throw the spoon back at him, and as I come over the top of his head, I noticed that he turned on the perspective mode. I seen him turn, and then I knew, all right, well, that which end is his head. And the next pitch with the flutter spoon, I brought it just basically right over the top of his nose, and I saw him on the other screen just raise his head up off the bottom and grab the spoon, and I set the hook. And knowing how big he was when he had just rolled, as soon as I set the hook, I just pushed the button because he's going to make a run and with 20-pound test, and I figured he's going to eat. Hopefully, the other thing I was hoping that he didn't have the line in his teeth anyway. Mm-hmm. And luckily he didn't. So when I set the hook, pushed the button, I let him run, and he ran pretty hard, probably about 50 yards. And I just turned the boat and just started, you know, I kicked the trolling motor on high and just started chasing basically after him, trying to just keep distance down and let him try to wear him out. But he ran about 50 yards, turned around and went back the other way, went all the way back to where I caught him at. I'm just holding about as much pressure as I figure I can get away with, trying to just keep up with him. And there's really nothing to hang up on out there where he was at. So I knew as long as I didn't horse him and break him off, I had a really good chance of at least getting him up close to the boat and getting a better look at him. But anyways, he ran back to where he was. He turned. He tried to go across the channel. There was a big treetop over there. And that was the only – when he started making that run towards it, that was the only time I really was worried that he might get me wrapped up in it or whatever. And I got him turned back out, got him back out in the middle of the channel again. And then he pretty much at that point, he gave up. The water temperature was so hot. It was 95 degree water that day. And so, you know, it seemed like it was a long time. It probably was only like 5 minutes or 5 or 8 minutes or something to actually get him wore down. But I got him upside the boat good enough to get a good look at his, you know, how he was hooked. And he made one more little run back onto the boat, and I got him right back up. And then he just kind of laid on the side. Well, then I'm looking at the fish and I'm thinking, all right, now what do I do? Because he's not going to fit in the net. And I didn't have a glove or anything to grab him with. I didn't have any way I was going to land him in I called my dad on the phone, and because once I got him up there, I called him. I said, hey, I got a gar that's like 5 foot long, and you know, it's big as a cantaloupe. I mean, he's a big one. I said, I don't know how I'm gonna land him. I said, I could get my bait off of him by just using a pair of pliers. I said, but I really would like to get a picture of him. If nothing else, just get him back to the bank to get a picture of him. So, and I wasn't very far from the house. I was probably 300-400 yards from the house. And so I just started trolling back, holding the fish over the side, you know, just dragging him along beside the boat. Drug him all the way back to the house, pulled him up as far as I could on the ramp. And by the time I got back to the house, every time I would stop, the fish would just turn like vertical in the water and just sink straight to the bottom. I mean, he was just give out. He didn't
he was done.
Hardly do any head shakes or nothing. But I drug him up the deal. Once I got him up on the bank, I dug around, found a little piece of rope in the rod box that I had, and I made me a loop, and I just slid it over his tail, and he never flopped or anything. I slid it all the way up and tied it off right behind his gills, and got my bait out of his mouth. Well, then I'm laying there looking at him on the ramp. I'm thinking, all right, he's, in my head, I'm thinking he's 25, 27 pounds. I really don't know, but he's just big. And I Googled what the record was. It was the biggest one I'd ever seen. It was, and I knew he was big. So I Googled it, and the first place, or the biggest one record at the time was 30.88. And the top five was only fifth place one or whatever was 16 something. It was like 2 16s, a 19, and 2 30 pounders. Well, as soon as I saw that, I said, well, he's top five for sure, because he's way over 16. And I have a Catch Cove scale that I weigh bass with in the boat all the time. And I actually didn't even know what it went up to, but I hung the rope on it, picked the fish up, and he was 31 on my handheld scale. And so then I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll call around, try to figure out what who has a set of certified scales. I called Chase McPherson at Wildlife Fisheries, called him, asked him where a set of scales were, and he suggested a couple of places. I called around, and either their scales were not big enough, like they only had 30-pound scales, or they were not going to let me bring a gar up there into the into the place to weigh it.
Yeah, and, I can't blame them on that. I mean,
yeah. So we called around a few places and finally, and then I got a hold to K&M, and they were closed, I think, or were about to close when I called them. And luckily, they said they'd stay and wait on me and let me get it up there to it to weigh it in up there. And then that's probably where the Facebook Live, where they did the whole weigh-in live on their page.
And what did the K&M scale show?
It was 31.49.
Hey, let me ask you, what was that little kid doing while you was fighting that thing? I can just imagine me as a little kid. I'd have been talking all kind of noise, man.
He saw, I don't know how much he saw of, I don't think he saw the swirl when the fish rolled the first time. And, but I don't know if he got a look of the actual fish until I got it up beside the boat. And then the first time it came up beside the boat, he was like, oh my gosh, that's the biggest fish I've ever seen. You know, it was bigger than he was.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started asking me, what are you going to do? How are we going to land it? I said, I have no idea. I said, but I've got a $12 spoon in his mouth that he is not going to get away with if I can help it.
I heard that.
But we figured out how to get him back to the house, got him on the ramp, and you know, and then he was all excited, and whenever I caught the fish, we had about 15 minutes left. That's kind of why we pulled up there too, was it was the last place that was close to the house, and I pulled up there and just after we landed the fish, his dad shows up, and I got him to take a picture of it at the me holding it there on the ramp. But yeah, and Matt didn't know what I had till I got to K&M and then officially weighed it.
Man, I tell you, cuz, that's impressive that you fought him as long as you did, cuz in your words, I know what I'd have horsed him, and I'd have lost him just as quick as he got on there. But I guess that's the experience that you have, you know. You've probably been in a situation, yeah, I'm not going to say exactly like that, but similar before.
Yeah, well, we got a little.
Is I don't know. Glitching a little dark. Bit. Okay. Huh.
Yeah, I don't see you.
I still got you. Keep talking.
Okay. Well, anyways, and you've probably hooked some fish before too. You know, you hook a fish and you know it's huge, and then all of a sudden it pulls off and you get one of those big 50-cent piece size scales off of a buffalo or something. And you hook a bunch of fish, and I didn't know at first how this fish was hooked. I didn't know if I had him hooked in the mouth or what until I got him up to the boat, but he was hooked inside the mouth. I've got pictures of that of him beside the boat where he was hooked in the mouth. Mm-hmm. But when I first hooked him, I didn't know where he was hooked, so I just was trying to give myself the best chance to land him. I knew if I horse him at all and he's not hooked good, then he's going to either pull off or break me off. And that, so yeah, just, I don't know. That was the game plan. As soon as he bit it, that the game plan was just main plan, I guess, really and truly was don't break him off to lose the spoon. And then let's see where he's hooked on once we get him up.
That's right. All right, dude. But, well, shoot. Go ahead. Keep going. I want to hear all of it.
I mean, if you hooked a bunch of gar, or you know, bass fishing or whatever, you hook any gar, their nose and their mouth is so hard and bony, mm-hmm. that most of the time they come off. It's pretty rare that really to land one. A lot of times he can shake and you don't really have a good hook. But to where this one was hooked right in the very corner, I mean, it was the perfect place to hook one. That it had actually penetrated through that little lip there. He wasn't coming off. He was the only way I could have lost him was either if he'd have done some weird rolling or something and got the line wrapped around his nose and cut it, or just me being dumb and horse him too much and break him off.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, dude. Well, shoot, that's all I need, man. I just want to get that story and hear it straight from you. That was all right. Now, look, what you going to do with him?
I'm actually going to try to mount him myself. I have been playing around with some taxidermy stuff. I've mounted three bass already. And they turned out pretty good. So I'm going to try it myself. I looked at trying to price it out, and it's really expensive, mm-hmm. to get somebody to do it. And I was like, well, if I mess it up, I guess it's just a gar, but
yeah, but it's a state record gar.
But it's a big one. But I think, you know, I've done those three bass, and I'm pretty sure that I'll be able to do it. I have pretty good confidence that I'll be able to make it work right. And the hardest part is the painting, you know, the painting part of it with mm-hmm. the airbrush. That's going to be the most challenging part. One good thing though is if you don't like the way it's painted, you just paint it again.
There you go.
You just paint it till you like what it looks like, and then that's what it's going to be.
There you go.
But
all right, brother. Well, shoot, man. You got anything else you want to add to it?
No, I don't guess.
All right, I tell you this.
Looking.
Let's talk about that the school one more time, or the workshop you do. How can folks get in touch with you about this workshop?
So they can either you can send me a text message or direct message me on Facebook, or I can give you my email address and they can send me an email and I'll be able to get them all the information they need.
Okay. All right.
Basically, this year I did the first 3 weeks in June. And then I did the 2 weeks after the 4th mm-hmm. of July of this year. It started out, I was just going to do 3 weeks in June and kind of just see. I didn't know how it was going to be. I'd never done it before and didn't know, you know, what kind of interest I was going to have or anything. And I don't know. I did the first 3 weeks and everybody liked it and the word got out. Just word of mouth. I had parents calling me and sending me emails and stuff saying, hey, I want my kid signed up. So I had enough kids to do another session in July. And so next year I'm probably going to do the same thing. I may do a few more weeks next year. We'll just see how that goes.
Good stuff, Jake Orman. Good stuff, cuz. But look, I appreciate you taking time out on this Sunday evening to come in and talk.
Yeah, no problem.
You got to get back on that YouTube stuff, man. Could you imagine if you'd had the camera rolling on YouTube for your YouTube video when you caught this fish?
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool. If somebody has any tips on how to keep a GoPro from overheating, I need that because that thing, it gives me the fits every time I try to use it. I hit the record button and I fish for a few minutes. I turn around and show the camera, and it had done quit for, you know, it had stopped recording because it overheated 30 minutes ago.
That's about right.
It's aggravating. That thing, it's always got to find a way to keep it cool. I don't know if I need to wrap something around it or what I got to do.
Well, I'm sure there's somebody out there that's done found a little trick. And if you know the little trick, get with Jake, because you never know when opportunities like this are going to come again, and he wants to be ready for it. So
that's right.
All right, dude. Well, hey, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and appreciate you again, brother.
All righty. Appreciate it.
All right. Yes, sir.
Bye.
Bye. You did good. You did real good. I'm on probably –